Welcome to the Nightbird Radio Podcast. I'm Timothy Saylor, and I'm going to be your host this evening as we sound out the subconscious, navigate the nocturnal, and explore the farthest reaches of our experience. Coming at you from the back of an 86 Dodge Ram van on the rolling foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the Great Forest, deep in the heart of the Kali Yuga. This is Radio for the Hauntological Turn. Before we get into the meat of the episode, I wanted to take a second to remind you that the Nightbird Radio Podcast is fully supported through contributions and donations from listeners. There are no ads, there's no monetization here currently. In the future, that might change. We'll have to see what comes. But for now, this podcast is fully supported through listeners like you. And this podcast does cost money. It does take time. It does take energy. And so I'm asking, if you get anything out of this podcast, if you enjoy it, if it makes your day better, if it helps you on your journey, that you take a second to go to nightbirdpodcast.com, hit the donate button, go to the donate link, and turn that value that you've gotten out of this podcast into a number and contribute that energy, that currency back to me so that I can continue to give you the content that you want. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. And welcome back, Nightbirds. It's great to have you back, and it's great to be back. This week, I am rejoined by Mel Priestley, writer and astrology consultant. It's great to have you back, Mel. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic, and it's always good to be back here.
So let's see. Before we get into kind of what happened between the last episodes that we've recorded, do you want to real quick just plug your stuff, where people can find you, where they can get consultations from you, all that?
Yeah, sounds good. So you can find me online, melpriestley.ca. Google me, you'll find me. I blog somewhat infrequently lately, but I have some new stuff in the hopper. There's lots to talk about for the fall and going into 2025 for sure. So yeah, you can find me writing about astrology, and you can book consultations through my website there too.
And you can also go back and listen to past episodes. However, they're very topical. So, you know, that's why we keep doing them.
There's still some good stuff in there.
There's always good stuff. Yeah, some of that stuff's evergreen.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, wow. A lot has happened since we've last spoken on here.
And it wasn't even that long ago.
No, it was like, what, a couple months?
June, I think. Yeah,
it feels like a whole year of events has happened.
Time has an interesting quality. It feels, the stuckness that I observed last time still feels a little bit there. But don't worry, because going into 2025, I think things are going to accelerate quickly.
Yeah, and we'll kind of like look back on this fondly.
Yeah.
Remember when things were slow?
Yeah. Yeah. They're not, though. Like in if I look at my day job in particular, the summer is usually a quieter time for me, and it wasn't as much this year. And I'm a little mad about it, honestly, but it's okay.
It's been super hot. Has it been hot there?
Yeah, we got a hot stretch to the point where I've decided, okay, I'm going to buy AC. And I mean, if I don't install it in the whole house, I'm at least going to get a portable unit. You probably have it because you live way farther south than me.
Oh yeah, it's like it's a must. It's not.
Yeah, right. But and it feels like a must here now too. Like we never used to get, you know, stretches 2 weeks or more of like over 30 degrees, which, well, that's Celsius. So it's hot. It's not 30 Fahrenheit, which is crazy. But yeah, so like where it's just super hot and if you don't have AC, you can't sleep because your house is gross. And yeah, it just got to the point where I don't want to do that anymore. So yeah, it kind of feels like you need full climate control.
I gave up sleeves. I was just like, fuck, I'm not doing it anymore, dude. Yeah. Like, and I'm not talking about long sleeves. I'm talking about short sleeves too. Just like, get off me. Mm-hmm. Shoulders out, baby. It's
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, you got to. So let's see what has happened since we spoke. We've had an attempted assassination of a presidential candidate in America.
And then Biden stepping down. So
Biden stepping down.
Candidate completely for the Democratic Party. Yeah. So it was a total reversal. And actually, I don't remember us talking specifically about American politics, but some of the other astrology podcasts and people I remember listening to in early July, it's already so stale dated because in mid-July, we had the Mars-Uranus conjunction on the fixed star Algol. And we noted that last time is like, ooh, that looks spicy and sudden, abrupt, violent things happening. Well, Trump got shot like a day before that was exact. So yeah, that's pretty bang on, literally. And then Biden stepped down like within a few days after that. So, and then Kamala Harris, you know, is now the candidate. And so that was just, oh, and then shortly, I mean, it was a little bit after that, but I guess RFK stepping down also and then endorsing Trump. So yeah, there was a lot of like sudden reversal things that happened in the election in particular. And I think it really fits the astrology being so unknown and unsettled. And with all the Neptune and Saturn influence, where it's like Saturn's trying to maintain control, but Neptune's just throwing illusions and delusions everywhere and no one really knows what's going on, like that's going to keep going well past election day. So I don't know how it is in the States, though. I'm always curious to hear boots on the ground. From up here, the media would have you believe that everyone loves Kamala Harris and she's totally going to win. But I think that no matter what happens, I've always said the other party, the one who loses is going to blame the other one of cheating. Like whatever happens, always. It doesn't matter which one wins. It's just that's what happens now. Like that's just a given.
That's what happens every time. And then, but what you have to do is, and this is the part that's, you know, literally 1984, is you got to memory hole the idea that that has happened before and that the other side does it too. So like you not only just pull out the same tactic, but you got to kind of like gaslight people into thinking that it's the first time that tactic has ever been used or proposed. Right.
Yeah. Memories seem very short these days and literally so, like, haven't they proven our attention spans are like, you know, seconds now because of
mine is.
And all of that. Yeah. Well, it's easy to just, you forget. And even as someone who's watching, you know, historical cycles and, pull it all the cycles, right? Like watching all of the, you know, call it current event cycles playing out. So much happens all the time that it's super easy to lose track. Like I was just looking back at 2022 and going through some stuff and I was like, oh my God, I just forgot half the stuff that happened. Like it was just wild.
Yeah. And it's very like, what's the next thing? Because one of the crazy things is, so it's one of those things where like, for a week after the Trump assassination attempt, everyone was like kind of on the same, not necessarily on the same side, but they were like on the same level of like, yeah, that's not cool. We don't do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so Kyle Gass said something from Tenacious D, said something about it, like made a joke about it and got fired from Tenacious D. And like stuff like that was happening. Like, you know what I mean? Like people were clapping back even from the other side of the aisle. Like, no, we don't joke about that. That's not cool.
That's really positive to me because I wasn't sure. Cause I have to say I was at a party of astrologers actually on that day on July 13th when he was shot. And so then, you know, we all have our phones on us, even though we're at a party and all of a sudden we get, you know, a news buzz to be like, you know, Trump is shot. And one of the ladies there said, it was like, oh, Trump got shot in the ear, but he's alive or something, right? And she was like, oh, they should have aimed a little bit more to the left or something. And
there was that. And whoa. So I what I will say is, like, before you get too optimistic, that lasted like literally 4 days of like,
they should have aimed better, like blah.
So
blah,
like it lasted like 4 days of like, yeah, we don't do that. That's not cool. Like we don't want violence on anybody. And then like it immediately devolved into like, yeah, they should have just had a better aim. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just,
And now it's like no one's even thinking about it.
Yeah. So, like, did that even happen? Well, no, immediately he got accused of it faking it, right? Like, it was, like, oh, that's not real. You didn't get shot. And it was like, really?
Yeah. And it's like, so, that was a weird thing, too, because that was a total shift. Like, okay, so conspiracy theories are not acceptable until you have them, is what it is. Like, right? Like, it's only conspiracy theories I agree with that are okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
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 Which.
Yeah. So that was,
course.
It really fits the symbolism of Mars and Uranus for sure. And on Algol, like Algol is the, you know, headless Medusa. It's a Medusa head, which I think ties in neatly and weirdly with Kamala Harris. Well, you had mentioned it before we got on the air. It was like Trump got shot at, but Biden was the one who fell. And there's a woman who's risen up in his place. So it's just, it's, I don't know. It's weird, but it fits.
It's interesting, right? And then, so you were mentioning too, that when we had that conversation, that her Jupiter is like 2 degrees away from Algol.
Yeah, she's got Jupiter at 24 even of Taurus, and Algol's at 26 Taurus, and that conjunction of Mars and Uranus was at 26 Taurus. So it pinged her Jupiter, which Jupiter is a good, lucky planet, and it worked for her, right? Like it played out. She also has Jupiter very close to her ascendant right now, so which is also generally a fortunate type of thing. So it worked out for her, that's for sure.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. It's probably going to sound stupid because I'm going to be like, was there anything else big? And there's probably like 10 big things.
I do the same thing. I've been kind of, but I don't, yeah. I'm sure there were lots of other things.
Yeah. I don't try to, I really don't try to be in it that much these days. I just like want to just live my life. You know?
Same. And that's a good thing because, again, nothing is real. Is what kind of the vibe, right? So,
well, I got enough planets. I got enough of my own planet shit to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
but hey, we're coming up to eclipse season now, which is always usually a time of increased chaos a little bit, although chaos that often doesn't. It's often just so hard to see what that comes as. So we're looking for things that, you know, might be a repeat of like what happened in the spring. So in the spring, if you remember, we had that really big solar eclipse in Aries, the one that was visible everywhere. And there was all the media coverage about it. And that was on April 8th. And then there was also before that a lunar eclipse at 5 Libra on March 25th. So think about, you know, March and April. And then now we're going into another set of them in the fall here. So on September 17th, there's a lunar eclipse at 25 Pisces. That's the first one we get in Pisces.
This is where we shift into the next signs, right?
Yeah. Nodes are shifting to Virgo Pisces early next year, 2025. So that's the first Pisces eclipse we get, and it's conjunct Neptune. Like, so
wow.
Not only are eclipses about obscuration and hidden things, it's conjunct Neptune. So you're really not going to know.
And you're in Pisces.
And you're in Pisces. So it's all muddy anyway. Exactly.
Yeah. I just see like very like, you know, the old school like shimmer effect from film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where like you go into a dream sequence. That's immediately what I think of when I think of what you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. And it straddles the equinox. Actually, the eclipses for a little while have been around the vernal and the autumnal equinoxes. So it's a shift anyway into the, you know, the next sort of season. So it's interesting that it's coinciding with eclipse season. So it is a shift. We'll say, if anything, it will be very shifty.
So let's see. So lunar eclipse in Pisces conjunct Neptune. What does that say? Like what? Okay. So if we're going into a new cycle with these eclipses, like how is that being rung in? Like, I'm not asking you to say specifically what will happen, but what type of energy, like, I know we did mention like the very illusory dreamy stuff. Mm-hmm. Is there more to that? Like, is that something to look for the next however long?
Because
it seems like that's like also some like, I don't know. I feel like there's more of that going on, but sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So, I mean, it is a phase. It's not like a switch. So, I mean, after the Pisces eclipse, there's another one in Libra. And then we get one more eclipse in Aries next year. So that's the Aries-Libra axis that the eclipses have been under for just under 2 years. So it is shifting from that. So you look at it as you're shifting from Mars and Venus ruling the eclipse cycle to Mercury and Jupiter ruling the eclipse cycle. So that does give you some indication and like, okay, maybe you should pay attention to those two planets. They have a bit more of a, I guess, a sway over the proceedings.
Yeah.
Symbolism wise, I mean, so Pisces, I mean, we're very familiar with now with Saturn and Neptune there. And so it's, you know, a vast ocean, you know, kind of no boundaries and everything just kind of merges. It's a water sign. It's like the wateriest of the water signs. Virgo is the mutable earth sign. And it's, you know, the domain of Mercury. And so it's more about, when I think of Virgo, I always think of like crafting and building things with your hands. And that type of thing. It's Mercury in Gemini is a lot more like cerebral and intellectual and thinking. And then in Virgo, it's like applied. It's almost like applying the thoughts and the intellect to whatever. So that's kind of just very, very basic.
So we're going to be building, we need to build boats is what you're saying.
Well, so it's funny you should say that because another thing just again popped through my radar yesterday. And again, this may be fear porn propaganda headline. Probably it was, but it was about apparently Russia is targeting the deep sea on the deep sea internet cables. So you have a network of undersea cables running through everywhere that connects us together through the World Wide Web. And apparently now they're a military target. Well, yeah, I guess they would always be a military target because if you knock out them in a good enough fashion. But if you think about Pisces with eclipses happening there, with Saturn there as well, bad things with water, bad things with ocean is like a very, very basic sort of symbolism type thing. And we've seen some of that already. There's been, you know, conflicts on water, piracy and stuff like that. But I don't know, deep sea internet cables getting blown out. That's like a weird combination of Mercury and the Mercury being the interconnectionist, the telecoms and stuff like that. And then Pisces, you know, the ocean. So it's on that axis of the Virgo Pisces. It's kind of connected there. So again, I'm just spitballing, but I was thinking, okay, shit. So we've got eclipses starting in Virgo Pisces. And so we get them in the fall and in the spring. And next spring, you know, not to give spoilers for people, but March 2025 is a total shit show. The Aries ingress, which is, you know, when the sun goes into zero Aries, it's kind of considered the like start of the astrological new year. And it happens, you know, March 22nd or 21st, somewhere around there. Anyway, that is right in the middle of eclipse season. It's right in the middle of Mercury's retrograde, Venus's retrograde. There's just like a lot going on. Neptune makes its first ingress into Aries. Like it's this whole thing. So to me, there's something there, and I'm not predicting that Russia's going to blow up the internet and then we're all going to be on, you know, dial up or whatever, not even sending postcards again. But hey, it fits the symbolism. So
It's interesting to think of the internet as being underwater.
Underwater, right? And so previously there's been talk about, and I've been thinking about this, of the internet going down. And generally, for me anyway, maybe I was just clueless, but I thought, okay, well, we would need something like a Great Carrington event, which if you're not familiar, there was a massive solar flare in the late 1800s, and it took out like all of the telecom, well, not all, but a lot of the telecommunication infrastructure at the time. Now, in the late 1800s, it was like telegraph wires, right? We didn't have the internet. We didn't really have telephones yet, but it was the early form of that. And so it was a solar flare that sends, you know, electromagnetic radiation beaming at the Earth. And so it, you know, there was literally telegraph wires on fire, like they kind of blew up a bit and it took a long time to restore that. We're at a solar maximum right now, like the sun is at its peak cycle. You can't actually pinpoint when it hit its peak until afterwards, but the sun's been really active, which is why we've been getting really great auroras, actually. There's been lots of northern lights for the last year or so. So they think that it's pretty much happening now, and that fits the model as well. So if we were going to get a big flare to knock stuff out, it would be now. But that's kind of coming from the air, right? But then it's like also underwater. Yeah, like all those cables connecting to all the different continents and all of the different hubs of stuff. So it's also it's weird. Yeah, it's like there's an undersea network of internet as well as whatever we see up top in the sky.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm gonna have to think with that some, because like and especially it's the part that connects country to country specifically, right? Like, and continent to continent, like obviously, like we could probably have some kind of internet that was like, well, I don't know, actually, I don't really know how it works enough to know, like, if that kind of stuff went out, like, would you be able to have just like an intranational internet? Like, would the internet just become like very siloed to each country?
That's my very not expert understanding. Like, I think it would depend on where it was. Maybe we can't reach Europe, you know, for a while, but, you know, North America is okay. Like, maybe that. So, I mean, it would still fuck with, well, lots of stuff with communications, but with the financial markets and stuff too, and the trading that happens all over the world like that. So I was having some anxiety about finance stuff. And again, I work in finance. The general mood is that it's going to be more volatility, but nothing disastrous is really predicted. But of course, who can predict a disaster? But I don't know. It just seems like we have Pluto, who has just gone back into Capricorn for the last time. So Pluto went in on September 1st and is going to stay there until November 19th. And that's it. So like, this is Pluto's last visit to Capricorn, and then he's out and he's in Aquarius for good for like 20 years. So it's kind of like Pluto being corruption and things kind of rotting. And over the course of his journey through Capricorn, it started off with the financial collapse in 2008. And I always did think there was some weird poetry if it bookends, you know, the Capricorn period with financial crises. Could happen. Not saying it will, but wouldn't be surprised if it did. It really kind of just showed, though, like the rot at the heart of all of those Capricorn institutions. Like, if you think of the last 20 years, all of them, no one has faith in any of them anymore. And nor should we, for good reason, right? Like, finance, healthcare, government, like all of this stuff is just, you know, we saw the dark underbelly. And so then we get one last kind of look at that. And then Pluto goes into Aquarius, where he's going to start showing the rot or causing the rot, who knows, in the more social institutions. So that'll be a shift. And then, I mean, there's other stuff with Aquarius. It'll be like,
and there's some internet stuff there too, right?
Tech, like, and AI and all of that is very Aquarian. Yes. So I think it's going to expose the rot in Silicon Valley, dare I say, because it just seems so, and again, talking about finance stuff, everyone's talking about the Magnificent Seven, which are the tech stocks that are, you know, their market cap is bigger than most countries or all countries. It's just ridiculous. And, you know, Nvidia and the bubble that they've created, like, to me, it just seems like such a massive bubble. They're literally saving AI companies from bankruptcy by injecting them with cash, which just happened. I can't remember the details now, but yeah, it was, it wasn't ChatGPT. It was one of the AI companies was going to go bankrupt. And then Silicon Valley wrote them a check basically to keep it going because they're so invested in the AI thing. So to me, I think, like, that can't last. That's just a huge bubble.
And that's totally built on like these promises and hopes and dreams of like what this can be. And like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm sure it does have a lot of places where it can revolutionize the way things work, but they are basically selling it as like some sort of a salvation of humanity, mm-hmm. right? Like, where it's like, instead it's like, well, it's just going to take over the stuff that people, it's going to take over the stuff that people like to do and like make it so that, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and there's already
This stuff replaces drawing and music and voices.
Yeah, art and music. And then
great.
It's like, why does the AI get to do the art and the music and the creative stuff and not the shitty stuff that I have to do? Like,
yeah.
All day. Yeah.
Like, I remember. So, like, this was a fear in like the trucking industry where it's like, what's going to end up happening is like self-driving trucks are going to take over like I don't think so either, but the fear was like, you know, that they're going to take over like the long haul part of it. And then like they stop it at like a station and then the person gets in and they drive it around the city. And I'm like, okay, so basically it's going to take over the funnest part of the job and then make you do the really annoying part. And I just see like, okay, now that seems like a microcosm of like the whole AI thing. It's like, mm-hmm. not to mention the fact that, and I was talking about this last night on the episode I recorded. I don't know which one will come out first. So, oh well. But it's kind of like, it's like they just like, oh, we have a fresh new slave. So like, let's create this thing that can do some more of the shit work. You know, we don't even need the peasants anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't like that attitude. Like, that's not
good. I'm not a fan. Yeah. So yeah, the AI stuff, it really took off when Pluto first went into Aquarius in early 2023. And then all of a sudden, everyone was talking about it. And so it really timed well to that. So obviously that's on the agenda for, you know, Pluto and Aquarius, although it's not just that, but yeah. But it definitely already seems like the bloom's coming off the roses, or it will very soon, as we've just said, because it's not delivering on all the stuff that a year and a half ago, they were saying, oh yeah, 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 it's going to be great. And then that's why all the money poured into it. So yeah, those tech companies and AI companies really have to prove something soon, because I don't think anyone sees it in any way that makes a big difference in their life. And in terms of self-driving cars and all of those really like cyberpunky versions of it, maybe there'll be some of that. But my understanding is that, like, number one, I don't think people are comfortable with that, but also there is already a lot of AI type stuff in your car.
Yeah.
If it's newer anyway. We rented a new car when we were on vacation in the summer and we hated it, but it turns out you can turn off most of the features. But the thing that we didn't, because we have an older car, so
yeah,
when automatic braking is kicking in,
that's like, annoying as hell.
Is it decelerating? What the fuck? Like, I'm,
yeah, it's like really dangerous. It's dangerous.
Yeah, so dangerous, because then you're jamming.
So trucks,
that,
and all trucks do that.
Oh god, yeah.
And they'll see like a ghost, like a shadow, and they'll think it's like you're about to hit something, and they will fucking slam on the brakes.
And it's, yeah, and that's the other thing, is it's like, it's not reliable tech. So I've heard stuff about a bird flies in front of your truck and it slams on the brakes, and it's like, yeah, that could be disastrous, because sorry bird, I love you, but like, you can hit the bird and you'll be fine.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yes, if a person or a car is in front of you, then sure, hit the brakes. But anyway, I just don't know if it'll get to the point where we can rely on it. But I think that the professions who should be worried about AI are like doctors and, well, lawyers, but hopefully not. But that's other dystopic type of implications in that.
Yeah.
Administering justice from a robot. Ugh.
Yeah, like a Judge Dredd robot.
Yep.
And I should correct myself and say it's not all trucks, but it's like all the new ones, like all the ones in the fleet that I drove for had it. So it's like most of the new ones they put out have them. And I think you can turn those off too, like if you own the truck. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't see. So like the coolest thing that AI has done so far is make sweet dark fantasy TikToks. And has that really changed my life? Like, kinda, but not really.
It's fun, but yeah, I still gotta go to work and pay bills and
right, exactly. Like, now for the person, you know, that makes money off of that TikTok channel, like, fucking great for them, you know?
Yep. I don't know so many the artists I know don't work directly in those fields, but like illustration and stuff, like I do worry, and you know, I feel bad for those people, because I think those are the ones who have really probably felt the hit of this, because you can use AI to generate the images, but
yeah, well, and like I was
stuff I wonder about, yeah,
like I was telling you before we hit record, like I use it for the art, for the episode art,
right?
And one of the reasons for that was because it wasn't because I was necessarily jazzed to do it, mm-hmm. but like the stock image sites that I was using to find the art became flooded with like shitty AI art. And so I was like, well, I at least want to be the one doing the prompt.
Right.
I'm not going to let someone else put in the prompt for me. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those things where, and you know what? Like, if that's how the game is going, then I just play the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I'm not going to sit here and like get bitch about it.
Yeah. You're also a little podcast, probably not making a ton of money off it. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Go to nightbirdpodcast.com to support the show.
Exactly. But so I think for that is fine. Like, I mean, same on my blog. I mainly use stock images and stuff like that. But anyway, they're free from royalties to begin with, right? So it's not like I'm stealing from people. But but the big companies, the big media companies and stuff that are all using AI, I mean, those are the ones who have the budget to actually employ illustrators or photographers or whatever. So I don't know. I could see us go through this period where I think we'll come back around to more human-made art, and I think it'll be a selling feature, if anything. It'll be like, a human made this. Ooh, like, nice.
And I think there's cool ways to, like, so I am not a Luddite. I don't have a problem with technology. I think that the problem that we come across with technology is that we have a poor metaphysics to begin with. And I'm talking about us as a society. Like, you and I have great metaphysics, but like, you know, like the royal we have a poor metaphysics that on which it's based. So like, we create these things out of a unbalanced kind of broken view of the universe. And so like, when that happens, of course, it's all going to be like everything. It's like fruit of the poison tree kind of thing, where it's like all downstream from that incorrect way of viewing the world. So like, I think there is a place for AI in the world where it like collaborate, like where it like, it improves the experience, you know, but I don't even actually know what that looks like, because we have to like create that world. It's one of those things where like the way I view a new age or a new aeon or whatever you want to call it, is it's a shift in the collective consciousness that like wasn't even imaginable before that shift. And you enter in and you have a new way of thinking about things. Like, so people back in, you know, whatever ancient time period, like probably couldn't think of a time where like you didn't have to like fight tooth and nail to survive. Like there's been long periods of time like that, or you didn't, you know, like it was just kind of a fact of life that like you were going to have to go get blooded on a battlefield in order to be like an initiated adult or whatever. And that's not the case anymore. And it's not because we have better technology that's actually putting the cart before the horse. It is because of a collective shift in consciousness. Does that track? You know what I mean? So like,
it does. And I think picking up on this, Pluto and Aquarius, a big part of it will be consciousness itself. And this ties into the AI thing. And I think it's going to force people to reevaluate metaphysics, because I think that we are, and I've already seen little, you know, examples of this, of people talking about personhood and consciousness, and when is AI a person? When is AI conscious? You know, what does that mean? Right. And then, you know, the flip side of that holds up a mirror to our own selves and our own, you know, consciousness and our own personhood. And so my hope, my optimistic hope, is that that breaks down the, you know, materialism that we've been in for so long, and that people have more of an open mind about stuff like that. I also think we'll get AI Jesus, but, you know,
sweet.
You get some.
Yeah, dude.
Is it sweet? Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's great. I think for a story, it's great. Like, to me, I just look at it as like a dispassionate observer. And I'm like,
yeah,
that just sounds like an interesting fucking storyline. Like, you know,
Yeah, it's interesting. Here's what's on my bingo card, somewhat related for the next, we'll call it 20 years of Pluto and Aquarius, is is alien Jesus. So I don't know.
Yeah, Blue Beam.
This is like the, totally basically Project Blue Beam, right? But like discovering other beings and other planets, or and they show up and say, I'm your daddy, bow down before me, huh? Maybe. Or even just like finding actual evidence, which I swear we probably have already, but you know, like evidence of human civilizations on other planets and other places in the solar system. I think we talked about this before, Mars being the most common one. But yeah, I mean, that idea has been around in sci-fi for a long, long time, right? But yeah. It feels like there's something there. Like, doesn't it just feel like something?
I feel like the fact that the idea is here is the same thing as it being here. Like, So the fact that that archetype exists in the psyche of the world is, I don't even know that it has to be a precursor to it being enacted in the physical realm. I think it probably does, though, because that's just how it works. Like material follows spirit. But I think that like the idea of it is the reality of it. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? So like the fact that that exists in the psyche as an archetype means it's already here.
Yeah. But I don't buy that it's just another metaphor for colonialism, you know, like, because I'm sure there's been people arguing, oh, yeah, that's just 19th century colonialism in the 20th and 21st centuries. And I'm like, yeah, but not. I actually think literally, though, that this is a thing, not just metaphorically.
No, yeah. But I mean, like a thing, like an idea whose time has come.
Yeah.
You know, there was a thing that I saw. It was like an article that I saw on I don't know where, but about how, you know, those astronauts that are like stuck in space right now.
They're just like abandoned.
Yeah. And they started to hear like these weird noises. It was like a sonar click or something. And I'm like, is this it? Is this how it happens?
There's been so many little examples where I've said that. Is this it? Is this it? I mean, when you have people testifying before Congress about non-human biologics, and then the weirdest thing about that, and again, proving that nothing is real, or at least that's the sort of, you know, vibe we're under right now. So I was talking about that with a friend, and I said, I just don't understand how people still deny that, you know, aliens are real or UFOs are real or whatever, when there's literal Congress testimony saying like, this is a thing and we know about it and it's on the record and it's a matter of congressional or Congress record, whatever, however you say that. And then he was like, yeah, you know what though? Right after that happened, there was literal articles online. I think he said it was in like Gizmondo or something or like that, where it said, why do people still believe in aliens even though Congress proved that it wasn't true? And I was like, what Congress hearings were you listening to? Because the Grush stuff, he just said it and it's there. And I listened to the clip and there you go. So to listen to that and then just be like, no, it's just such a mind trip.
So there's an interesting thing about information nowadays where it's like, and this is probably some, we can get back to the astrology on this one probably, where it doesn't matter. Like, okay, I used to think that the more information was available, that the more knowledge would be available, or like the more truth would be available. Like information, like an increase in information directly correlates to an increase in being informed, right? But actually, it sort of, to me, seems to be from the evidence of my eyes and experiences, that it's actually more like an economy. So that you can actually get inflation of information, where like the more information that's being pumped into the system actually like ends up decreasing the amount of people being informed. Now, granted, there's probably a lot of interference that makes that happen, but there's just so many sources and so much noise that it really is almost like it's like flooding an economy with currency, and it decreases the value of the currency. Like there's so much information. Yeah, it's inflation of information. There's so much information that it actually decreases the value of it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I feel like that's a I don't know. Well, how do you think that fits into the astrology?
Well, Pisces itself is a Neptune. So in finance astrology, Neptune, I've heard, is associated with inflation. And Pisces is a water sign with no boundaries. So yeah, that's inflationary, I would say.
Yeah.
It certainly ties in with what we've observed in actual finances lately. So we'll see what happens when it goes into Aries. Maybe that'll come down a little bit, but yeah, the shift into Aries, I mean, so 2025 is really like the new chapter. It's very cliche to say that, but it's, so to put this into, not that I want to be like scary, but if you look at 2020s, like the decade of the 2020s, 2020 itself was the most astrologically active, we'll say, with a lot of shifts and a lot of big things happening. And I don't think that would come as any surprise given what happened. 2025 is the next most astrologically active year in this decade. So it's big. It's a huge tone shift. The fact that it happens right in the middle of the decade also is just kind of, isn't that just nicely poetic? You know, it is like a major shift point. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that happens next year, and we're not going to figure it all out immediately, but it's like setting the table, and we're getting to see there's just going to be new stuff, and things that are very important right now are just not going to be important. And things that don't seem important now, or we didn't even know about now, are suddenly going to be a major thing. So just having said that, like, that's kind of the shape of the rest of this decade. Is like 20, it was like 2020 exclamation points. And then we had, you know, 5 years to like figure out what the hell that was about. And then 2025, another exclamation point. And we get another 5-ish years to be like, okay, what's that all about? 2026 is also pretty gnarly, but it's 2025, I think, wins in terms of just sheer movement and volatility, we'll say.
So let's use that as a segue into, okay, so we covered the eclipses. Mm-hmm. Did you want to talk any more about the solar eclipse, or did we cover that?
So it's at 10 Libra on October 2nd. And so it is the last Libra eclipse that we get in this cycle. And then there's one more in Aries next year. And that's it for the Aries Libra eclipses. So I think it will probably be like a wrapping up of whatever has been going on for, say, 18 months. I think it'll be a revisitation of whatever went on in the spring. So it was in March. There was one at 5 Libra. So this one's 5 degrees after that. So personally, think back to that time in your life and what happened. You may get a little revisit of that, or conclusion, hopefully, of that type of thing. And kind of new stuff happening at the same time.
Cool. So let's go into Mars stuff.
Yeah, Mars. So
good time.
This is the transit when I was looking at this year. I think because Mars stations retrograde so late in the year, Mars stations retrograde at 6 degrees of Leo on December 6th. And so because it was so late in the year, when I was doing my forecasts, I was like, Mars goes retrograde, whatever, I'll think about that later. And now it's later and I'm thinking about it. And I don't love it, but that's very biased because I have Cancer is very, you know, big part of my chart. I have the Sun, Venus, and Mercury and the IC there. So I don't love that for me personally. But no one really likes Mars in Cancer. I shouldn't say that. There's going to be some people with Mars in Cancer native, and they're going to be like, hey, I like it. But it's just the reason we say we don't like it is because Mars doesn't really like Cancer. If you look at the, you know, the dignity and debility in astrology, Mars is very debilitated in Cancer. It's considered his fall. It's the sign opposite Capricorn, where he's exalted. So it's kind of the sign where Mars is the most incompetent and the most inept. And so when we think about that, okay, well, what does Mars do? Mars is action. He's boldness. He's anger. He's fire. He's sharp things. He's, you know, he cuts and he burns. And he likes to go forward fast. So when he goes retrograde, all of that kind of just gets, you know, suppressed. And then in Cancer anyway, Mars isn't able to do all of those things. You know, he can't be the soldier. He can't conquer things. He can't like take action and get things done. He's just kind of passive aggressive and sullen and just really, you know, not what he likes to be. And if you think about the sign of Cancer, this is the sign of the moon, right? So it's the moon's house. So it's a very sensitive place. It's, you know, the moon is associated with our mother. It's associated with our emotions. It's associated with where we take in nourishment. So Cancer is very much about where you're nourished and how you find that. So with Mars there, he's kind of challenging that. So I think it could be a period where people are having struggles with nourishment, which is maybe like a funny way of putting it. But so you may have struggles somewhat related to that, struggles with emotions, struggles with expressing yourself and taking action and getting things done, especially if you're a more action-oriented person, I guess. So my standard advice for Mars retrograde periods is always to go easy on yourself as much as you can. Energy levels are probably going to be lower than normal or more erratic than normal. And so it's not a time to like necessarily start a brand new workout routine or not an intense one anyway. Like, exercise is good, especially for Mars, but like, go easy, because I think the chances of getting hurt are higher in a Mars retrograde.
Work on your form.
Yes, work on your form. Don't work on like being able to deadlift, you know, hundreds more pounds than you can right now. And then also, so cooking. So I love cooking. It's big. And I actually think this might be a good remediation thing, especially for Mars retrograde in Cancer. Nourishment, food, you know, that's very much a Cancer thing. But then preparing food is actually a very martial thing often, because you're cutting and chopping and you're cooking with fire, you know.
Yeah, I like
hopefully
that.
Not burning, but yeah. So I think doing stuff in the kitchen, you know, working on different food stuff could be a good way to express that. Find new ways to nourish yourself, but also just be careful, because I think there's probably a higher chance that you'll like cut yourself or burn yourself in the kitchen.
Well, an interesting thing about that is, like, I think it's a very interesting metaphor that you're more likely to cut yourself with a dull knife. Huh? If you use a sharp knife, it's much safer. I don't know how that really applies, but I feel like there's something there. Like, so like Mars isn't as sharp in Cancer, right? Like,
yeah, it's a dull knife. Yeah.
So there's more likelihood of getting cut. I was thinking about while you were talking about it was, it almost is like, it makes me think of an army being bogged down in mud. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they can't march, and all they can really do is, like, sit there and camp. And, you know, armies start to get ornery, you know, when they're not able to move. When they can't be armies, and they cause trouble for the surrounding land and, like, you know.
And the people around.
And so that's interesting, because it sort of makes sense for what you were talking about for next year when you talk about Mars sort of like leading the charge. And was it March?
Yeah. So just to give people the dates here. So Mars, here we are recording this on September 8th, 2024. Mars just went into Cancer on September 4th. Mars enters the shadow period of the retrograde, which is the period before and after when he's in the degrees that he'll retrograde over. So it enters shadow period on October 4th. That's 17 Cancer. Stations retrograde on December 6th at 6 Leo, then retrogrades back through the early degrees of Leo, back through Cancer. Finally, stations direct at 17 Cancer on February 23rd, 2025, and then finally leaves the shadow period on May 1st, 2025 at 6 Leo. So we get a very long period of Mars in mostly Cancer and in the early degrees of Leo. So you will become intimately familiar with Mars in that part of your chart, for better and for worse. Where was I going with that?
Into March next year.
Oh, into March, right. So exactly. So Mars stations direct at February 23rd, and then March is when everything kind of goes crazy, I think I mentioned. So, you know, there's the pile up in Pisces, there's eclipses, Neptune goes into Aries for the first time, Venus and Mercury are retrograde at the same time. Like, it's just all sorts of things, chaos happening. And Mars kind of is like the soldier at the front, at the vanguard of the army, right? Like, leading in, finally he's on the straight and narrow, and then everything else just goes, ah.
Yeah, he's all fresh and like ready to roll. And so like he's like running in, and after all that time kind of sitting there.
Well, except not, because at the stage, the retrograde direct stations, that's where he's stationary. That's where he's just starting to take steps forward.
Interesting.
After sitting,
okay.
After going backwards. So I guess I threw out of the soldier charging off, it would actually be more like the soldier standing up and like just starting to walk forward slowly after, you know. Not,
or maybe he like runs forward but he trips a little bit
something like that,
yeah. Like it's this epic scene where it's like here he comes and he just fucking falls over.
Wham. Could be too, but yeah. So it's
okay, really, so it's like a sluggish army getting up.
Yes, yeah, kind of, yeah.
I like
and
it.
Then all of a sudden everything goes, like, they get ambushed immediately, like as soon as they just start to get moving. Yeah.
Oh gosh, wow, that makes me think of, like, there's multiple. This used to be a really widely used tactic, which is where you would get the other army drunk.
Oh, yeah.
You would get the other army drunk
the day before a battle.
Like, not if you have good discipline.
Well, yeah, because you want to be sharp. You don't want to be hungover while you're, or still drunk while you're being attacked.
And it just depends on supplies and stuff, but they would, like, send in, they would, like, purposely get them drunk.
Send booze.
Like, send in barrels. Because obviously, like, the soldiers want to get drunk. The generals don't want the soldiers to get drunk. So if you just give the soldiers the booze, they're going to get drunk.
Yeah.
And so the next morning, if you're going to attack at dawn and everyone's hungover, this might be a really good image of what goes on there.
I like it, actually, because we're talking about being in Cancer, too, which is a water sign. So I think yes. Booze metaphor and nourishment. And I remember I said, you know, things that nourish you, but be careful because booze, for example, is not very nourishing. You know, that would be an example of things that a little bit in moderation is okay, but you take too much and then it's bad, right?
Yeah, and your body confuses it for nourishment, then burns it and you're like, oh shit.
Yep. Yeah, so it's very much a Mars story for the rest of 2025 in a big way, I think. I mean, or 2024, sorry. I'm a year ahead. 2024 is really Mars kind of gearing up to do what he's going to do. And the eclipse is obviously happening in this fall, which we don't need to get into this, but on my heart of hearts, I hope that signals a surprise Canadian election. Fingers crossed. I'll maybe write more on my blog. Definitely, if they call an election, you'll check out my blog for more. But that, I think, would fit with things. So I'm.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to track that. Just because
the big elections, it's obviously the U.S. one, right? I mean, like that's the feature show that everyone's been talking about. So, and regardless of what happens again, no one's gonna believe it.
Is that what you think? Like, do you have any other like ideas about that? And like, I know you don't follow the politics in the U.S. too closely, but like, do you have any what you're thinking on what happens there?
So I was, well, what I've always said is what I said already, is that each side will accuse the other of cheating. So I think that's going to happen. In terms of who actually wins, I mean, up until the events of July, I thought Trump was a shoo-in. Like, it just seemed like, how could Biden possibly win? Well, now that Biden's not in the race, the media seems to want us to think that Kamala Harris has actually an excellent chance of getting in. And maybe she does. I don't know. But I just think that, and this isn't even my idea, so I'm going to just say, like, this was said to me, and I will repeat it because I think it could be likely, is something like a Bush-Gore thing, like that happened in 2000, where technically Gore won, but then again, the intricacies of American politics I'm not up on, but Bush gets in, you know, and there's legal stuff will definitely happen with this, like for sure. And then, so it could be that situation where like Kamala wins, but then Trump ends up getting president anyway.
Yeah, you think like delayed results and stuff too?
Yeah, totally. I think whatever happens, there's going to be legal challenges to the results. It's not, is it during a Mercury retrograde period? I remember last election was like on
Mercury retrograde. No, it's going retrograde November 25th is what I have.
So it'll be, yeah, but so it's that's just like, after that. But that ties into maybe them arguing and fighting.
Yes,
and
doing, that's the timing of like them, of like the, them figuring out what happened, and then also like the preparing for the handoff. If there is going to be one, right, no matter what, but like there's a lot that could go awry.
Right. Because I should really read up on it, because I was a punk kid in high school, so I wasn't paying attention. But when the Bush-Gore election happened, it was protracted, right? Like the results were known but not known. And then it was like weeks later when they were like, okay, Bush is officially the president.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it felt like a long time in 2021 as well, or 2020 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before I don't know. I can't remember exactly how long it was, because time, especially time then, was moving really weird.
It
was
actually only a few days, but it feels
felt like a long time.
Like if
it's
time. Like 4 or 5 days, but you're like waiting to find out who the friggin' president is. So it feels very long. Yeah.
So yeah, I could definitely see that happening. I think it'll be one for the books.
Do you have any sense of like who will be the dude or the dudette?
It's really difficult because I feel as well like I don't even know if I trust poll numbers.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, I don't. I don't. And like, I won't even definitively, like, it's just hard to know what's actually going on. It's hard to know what's actually going on. And I will admit that I have no idea what's actually going on, because what the media wants to tell you is different than what you see in your surroundings. But at the same time, you know, you go into downtown Atlanta, it's all Kamala signs. Mm-hmm. But out here, it's not that way. So, like, right. It's very, like, it's hard to trust anything that you're hearing. But it's also, it's like the evidence of my eyes is very situation based, where it's like, I'm big on like trusting my personal experience. But with something like this, it's like, I don't have personal experience of the whole country. I just have personal experience of this little area that I'm in. So like for something that big, I'm just like, I have no idea, dude. And I'm just going to watch and see, because I don't really. So another weird thing is that like all the like big tech stuff kind of coalescing around Trump is really interesting and weird to me. And it's like, okay, so all of a sudden you're like big on, you're like want to make it the Bitcoin,
yeah,
whatever that thing was. And then like the Bitcoin capital of the world, and like, and then him being into electric cars because of Elon Musk. Like there's just a lot of stuff there where I'm like, okay, so this is like kind of crystallizing what you're really about, yeah, right here.
So,
because yeah, I don't trust any of them.
No, and you shouldn't. Never trust a politician, people. Pro tip. You just looking at the actual astrology of it. So this Mars retrograde does not look good for Trump. Like this looks shitty for him. And I have heard people say like maybe he dies before the election even, or shortly after or something. I could see that happening because
based on his chart. I mean,
well, yeah, kind of. So, I mean, again, I'm not predicting anyone's death, but just looking at his chart. So he's old also too. So, you know, heightened chance of dying at any point, but he's got Mercury, Saturn and Venus in Cancer. This Mars retrograde period is going to hit his Saturn and Venus, three times. So he gets three passes of it because it's at 23 and 25 degrees of Cancer. His Pluto is at 10 Leo. So, you know, it's close, but not quite to the station. And he is in a Saturn ruled perfection year. So Saturn is his perfected planet. So Saturn already, you know, planet of death and negative things. And it gets hit with this Mars three times in his 12th house. That's not amazing. Like if I saw that, I'd be like, woo, take care of your health. Cause like that's not looking good. So, I mean, and it's also super tied into like hidden enemies, like 12th house stuff, right? Like he's going to have a big hidden enemy 12th house type of transit with this Mars thing. So whatever that works out to be. Kamala Harris, on the other hand, she doesn't have anything in Cancer. She's only got Mars at 21 degrees of Leo, but that's kind of out of the firing range. So it doesn't look nearly so bad for her, quite frankly, like really not at all. So I wouldn't be too concerned for her for this particular transit. So then I was like, well, let's look at, as we've been talking, let's look at J.D. Vance, right? Because if Trump dies, if he's in office, that's the president. Or I don't know, again, how this would work, but say Trump croaks in the next 2 months, but right before the election, would Vance become the presidential nominee or would they have to vote for a new person?
I don't know.
Me neither. Like, who knows? Hey,
I'm pretty sure it doesn't just pass like that. I think they would have to call a special delegation. But at the same time, they didn't do that when Biden dropped out. So I think all bets are off.
Kamala. Okay.
Yeah, they were just like Kamala. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's really weird. Vance, the Mars thing shouldn't be too bad for him. It's so funny. His chart is not the same as Trump's, but they both have really closest. Like Trump is 29 Leo, Regulus rising. Fixed star Regulus is basically there. And then Vance is 27 Leo rising. So like they both have, you know, very close things there. But I mean, the rest of it's all different. Trump's born on an eclipse, though, which is just always his wild card, right? Like this is just a thing. Like, but so is RFK, actually. I was looking at that when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. stepped down and endorsed Trump. I pulled up his chart again and I was like, how did I not remember that he's also born on an eclipse? So I don't know, man. You got two eclipse figures together. We're going into eclipse season ahead of this big election. So expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I think that's a good rule of thumb going forward.
Yep.
Expect the unexpected. All right. So, yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I just have no idea what's going to happen. And I don't even know. I don't even know how I would.
Well, I think you know if you mean? Say you know what's going on, you're like either lying or deluded, because the sense,
yeah.
Unless you're one of these apparent puppet masters, I don't even believe that necessarily, that there's someone who knows what's all going on and is pulling the strings. I think there's lots of people.
I'm a factions guy. Yeah.
I think that makes the most sense.
It's just how things work always. And like, especially when you have such a big, a sort of monolithic power such as the United States government, it's like, of course there's multiple factions working within it. And like, it makes perfect sense to me. Like, so like, obviously Trump is not in the faction that the Bidens are in, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah.
That doesn't make, so like the binary thinking screws this up, because you're like, well, they don't like Trump, so Trump must be good. Like, no, dude, he's just in a different faction than they are. That does not mean he's good.
Like, yep. Exactly.
And it's like, God, where did nuance go, man? Can we get that back? Do we ever have it?
This is hearsay, because I haven't verified it, but I did see something graphic. It was basically, if you look back in like American history, so just we'll just talk about the last 100-ish years. And if you look at the parties, Democrats and Republicans, and their voting, back in the past, it much more was about like they voted on issues and they voted according to like their belief systems, and they cooperated a lot more. Like, it was much more common for, you know, someone tables, say, a bill, and if that other party is like, no, but that's good, you know, we'll actually get behind that. And then they both vote on it. Whereas now it seems like we've gotten into that, like you said, the binary, where it's like, it does not matter what this person says. Okay, we're going to do this. The other party will just knee jerk say, nope, like without even looking at it or considering it, which just hurts the people more than anything, because it's like, hey guys, we're going to improve the healthcare system. And it doesn't matter who says that. The other party is going to be like, nope.
It's no, like, well, yeah.
But you should do that. Like, you really should. Like, you guys need help.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it's crazy. Everything is politicized. Mm-hmm. And nothing is... everything is politicized, but the... It'd be one thing if it was politicized and the parties were able to work together.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's super polarized, and there's just no, like, never the twain shall meet. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's okay to have principles, and it's okay to have ideals, and it's okay to have opinions that disagree with someone else. But the second where I'm like, everyone that doesn't have my opinion is evil, or everyone that's not in my party is like a fascist, that sort of thinking does not, like, it doesn't get anybody anywhere. Because like, if you can't compromise and you can't like sit down at the table and like talk through things,
I think
you can't do anything.
I think we will see that go away eventually. Like, I think we're in thick of it now, and I think that it's, you know, we're at the peak. But just seeing how things shift so much, I don't know what will cause a change, and it'll probably take a long time, because how could it not? The other thing could happen is a large-scale event that brings people together, but, I mean, that has other ramifications.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Let's see what else we want to look at here. We talked about Pluto re-entering Aquarius, right?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, after November 19th, we get Pluto in Aquarius for 20 years. So that will be a thing. The peak periods in that, I think, are going to be when... So thinking just in terms of like the Saturn-Pluto cycle, so that was... The new one started in 2020. And we got a pandemic, because that's what they do. Saturn and Pluto are not happy, fun energy type of things. So that is not going to happen again for a while anyway. But like, if you look at their relationship, the opening squares, the opening square and then the opposition and then the closing square. So basically when Saturn gets to a square to Pluto and then opposite and then square again, those are going to be the like sort of main periods of that cycle. But that's just one of many cycles that happen. And that's, there's still years away from that. Like the opening square isn't until, 2030-ish, I want to say. Let me just take a quick look here. Oh, it'll be like 2028-ish. Yeah. So, you know, like sort of end of the 2020s, we'll get something that's related to that. It'll be interesting. But yeah, before that, I mean, Gemini going into, and or not Gemini, Uranus going into Gemini. And we talked about that a bit last time. So that, I mean, that's the 2025, the reason why it is such a big year astrologically, I guess I should maybe explain that a bit more, is like we get big sign changes of the outer planets, which usually describe historical trends, right? So we get, you know, Neptune goes into Aries briefly. Saturn goes into Aries, although Saturn's a shorter cycle, but still the fact that he's very closely tied to that and is with Neptune the whole time is meaningful. Then Uranus goes into Gemini briefly in July 2025. So that's, you know, so we get Neptune and Uranus shifting signs, and then Pluto will have just shifted into Aquarius as well. So you get all three outers that have just recently are in the process of going into that. So that's a major tone shift, right? Like that's, all right, this is not the world that it has been for the last 10, 15 years or so.
I'm just excited for, and I don't even know if I should be, but it's just a welcome change. I'm just excited.
Welcome, it seems. Yeah.
Right. Like for Uranus to be out of my 12th house. So it's like, okay, so it's been like bubbling around and like exploding the inner workings of my subconscious. And now it gets, I just get to become it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of someone who just had Uranus on her ascendant, yeah, it shakes things up. So you got that to look forward to in the next few years.
Yeah, it'll be all right. I'm not like, I have just, it's been brutal. The way it has been. So like, well, no, it's like, and it's like ending. I can feel it's ending. But like for a while it was like, damn, dude, this shit's explosive. So just get explosive in a different part. I get to be the explosion instead of just getting exploded. Yes. from behind, right? Like
yeah. Hidden explosions, not always very fun. Yeah.
Yeah, man. That shit sucks. Cool. So do we want to, I think that's really it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like you got Mars stuff to look forward to this fall, everyone. And then through the winter, you know, try to keep your head down as much as you can. As again, with the Mars retrograde. So we've talked a lot about all these politics and all this stuff. And so when we bring it back down to like a human level, like a individual person level, my advice for Mars retrograde is, you know, don't poke the bear, kind of, right? Like this is a time period where you'll have a higher likelihood of stupid conflicts and disagreements and outright fights and violence. So do what you can to maybe avoid that if you want to. I mean, hopefully you want to avoid violence and conflict, but some people actually kind of get off on it.
Yeah, they feed off that shit.
Yeah, well, you're going to have ample opportunity to end up in conflict more so than otherwise. And given that the election's happening, like, it just seems like it would behoove you to talk to your people, talk to your friends and your family, especially over the holidays, because we'll be in the thick of it then. So like no politics at the Christmas table, you know, stuff like that, which I think is a good rule anyway. But yeah, this year in particular, Mars and Cancer, like arguing at a dinner table is like classic Mars and Cancer, you know, metaphor or like event essentially. So just, you know, do what you can to avoid that. You might not be able to avoid it. It might just happen. But that type of thing is like sadly on the table for Christmas this year. So yeah.
Also, you know, the lizard people who dwell atop the ziggurat They want you fighting your family at the dinner table.
Yes.
And it's, the timing is interesting because it's like a big news cycle and it's a big ad cycle. And it's like, they want you to be all jazzed up about everything. Whether they're literal lizards or metaphoric lizards is of no importance here. Whether the ziggurat is actually a ziggurat or if it's a metaphorical ziggurat is of no importance here. The point is that there are forces at play who benefit from your division, who benefit from you fighting your neighbor, who benefit from frothy emotional appeals to conflict, to disturbances, to destabilization. And we don't have to feed them that energy. We don't have to. And I think that, like, a lot of the time we might see it as a lost cause, and then we react out of our basest urges and end up playing into the very hand of the fucking lizards and the vampire lizards, you know? And like, we don't have to do it. I don't have to do it. I don't have to experience that. I don't have to have that experience, and I don't have to play into it. And this thing is only going to shift if we make a choice to be responsible. Is that the word I want to use? To be, good stewards of the world that we want to live in. How about that? To be midwives of the world that we want to live in. But it's like, that doesn't happen without doing some introspection. And to be quite honest, the word that people don't like to hear, it's going to take some work, you know, and integrating these things, like integrating the things that I can only see in someone else, but not myself. That's going to take inner work. And I think I really do have the hope that with that inner work and with that introspection, that we can like step up into the world that we want to live in, like that more beautiful place, that more beautiful world our hearts know is possible vision, you know? Like, I think that's there, but the way must be won, to quote Jack Parsons.
And it starts with saying, I disagree, but I love you anyway. And let's move on. And all the stuff we're talking about, how do we move on from all this division and binaries, oppositions? And that's a very Mars and Cancer thing too. We're disagreeing, but we can still love each other and support and nourish each other and get on with our lives.
Yeah. Excellent.
The highest expression of that. Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No,
oh, what about? I was going to say that would be a good note, but I do see Jupiter square Saturn on Christmas Eve.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You want, like, what do you think?
What do I think? I think
it kind of fits into what we were just talking about, right?
It does. There's actually a, let me just quickly pull the chart off, because I believe it is actually a T square. Christmas. Okay. Well, that's Christmas Day. Close enough. Yeah. So what happens there is we've got, Saturn squaring Jupiter. And I was thinking of it's a different cycle. So Saturn squared Jupiter at the same time that Pluto is opposite Mars. So that
this is like fighting your grandpa at the dinner table.
Yeah, kind of. It's like the two old men, like, bickering. Don't do that. It's the Mars opposite Pluto. It's that whole end of the year, like the last period of December is like a more intense period of the Mars retrograde cycle, because it's got the Pluto opposition. So, like, again, yes, it looks like a pretty intense Christmas season. So just like cohesive. Don't fight with your grandpa or your uncle or whoever at the dinner table.
Just remember the spirit of Christmas, which is Odin feeding you mushrooms on the back of a reindeer with eight legs charging to Valhalla.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on again and for helping me to understand some of this stuff. I think that, you know, I hope the listeners get as much out of it as I do, because it's always enlightening to me.
Yeah, it's always my pleasure, and I hope everyone liked it too. Feel free to email me if you disagree or agree, or you have comments.
Yes, and respectfully, not with vitriol and ire.
Sometimes the vitriol is fun, but
do you want some vitriol? Oh, sweet. No, I think that's cool.
Well, I don't want it, but let's just say, you know, if you can dish it out, you better be able to take it.
Yeah, and then, you know, what we could do next time would be like an angry astrology fan mail. Angry, like, you know what I mean? Like, astrology mailbox.
Yeah, I don't think I'm nearly spicy enough to get that. The little bit of pushback I've gotten was very mild. I'm not on YouTube, though. I think you have to go, like, be more public with it and say horrible incendiary things, and then you get the hate mail.
Right. Well, there's always something to aspire to.
That's true, right? Maybe I should do that over this Mars retrograde. That'll be what I do. Just piss everyone off.
No. There you go. Yeah. Just like, really embody that energy. Well, hell yeah. Again, thank you so much. And it's always a great time talking to you.
Absolutely.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thanks, you too.
Now I'm going to do this awkward thing where I have to. Do you experience weird shit? Do your parents not like to tell their friends about what you do in the woods? Do you make more friends in a graveyard than you do at a party populated by living humans? Do you have interactions with beings that are not strictly considered human? Do other people look at you like you're crazy when you mention talking to trees in casual conversation? If you fist pumped or even just answered yes to any of these questions, you may be a nightbird. So let's sing together. If you'd like to come on the show and flap your gums with me, share your stories, or just talk about the malleable nature of reality for a while, then send me an email at tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. That's tim@nightbirdpodcast.com. I'd love to have you on the show. But until then, I gotta fly. But before I go, let me say this. Remember, you are never alone. I believe you.